welcome to the Arts Programme. This week we have an absolutely horrific selection of guests in the studio to tell you the big plans for the 2023 Romford Horror Festival. And Claire's got a week off too, so another unexpected treat of the fiendish Mr. Spencer Hawken taking up some co-host capabilities.
Yes, it is me, sorry. And we'll be joined in the studio by Peter Blunden from our film festival and Alex Churchyard, filmmaker from Southend, who positively makes members of the public scream on the beach.
We'll also have a beautifully horrible playlist, as the theme suggests. But anyway, let's get on with the show. I'm Natalie.
And I'm Spencer, and this is the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM.
Can you not hear the secret music? I am the master, the voyeur. I summon them from near and far to make intoxicating music. But it's time now to leave them. I must follow my plan. I shall have to believe them. I need pastilles new. What I'm needing is fresh blood to revive me. Fresh blood in my veins. Will survive me in those dark souls. When I breathe your English air, I'll be a stranger everywhere. No one will recognize my features. I'll go out hunting all night long, just one more pale face in the throng, turning them all into my creatures. Hear the people all fear me. Their defenses are strong. They refuse to come near me. I need pastures new. What I'm needing is fresh blood on my pure. Don't call it a sin. A mere pecker to punctures in the skin. You and your Mina will live. The terror in the streets. Blood's a meager sacrifice, a most reasonable price for all the riches I am giving. We are the children of the night, when we must hide ourselves from light, but we must feast upon the living. We can take our slow pleasures. We won't run out of time. Inexhaustible treasures. London's full of them. I can sense it. Fresh blood to restore me. Quiet nights by the Thames. Fresh blood waiting for me. And countless requiems. Fresh blood running through me. I'll bleed London dry. Fresh blood will renew me. And I shall.
Was Fresh Blood from the 2005 concept recording of Dracula the Musical. After a brief run on Broadway, this musical has since proved popular in Germany and South Korea. The musical is based on Bram Stoker's 1897 gothic horror Dracula and follows the plot of the original book more closely than many of the horror movies. Set in Europe at the end of Victorian age, the story follows Count Dracula as he lusts for new blood. Jonathan Harker and Mina Murray fall victim to Dracula's unnatural charm and along with Dr. Van Helsing must fight Dracula's supernatural powers.
It's a very creepy one, Charlotte. So that was chosen by Charlotte, our musical maestro. We've not heard from Charlotte for a couple of weeks. But before we get on with the show, let's interrogate the guests as it is horror-themed. So, Peter, Spencer, Alex, what have you been up to over the last couple of weeks?
Let's start with Alex, because he is the quiet voice of the room.
Oh. Anything exciting that you can remember?
The last couple of weeks? Well, we just had Horror on Sea in South Inland Sea. And had a couple of films in the Tales of Terror and Horoscopes.
Cool.
So that was only its 10th year. I'm from Southend, so it's very local to me.
And a very special broadcaster came as well.
Yes, there was the BBC was there, and I somehow ended up on the...
On national TV, I mean, why not?
Yeah, I don't particularly like being that side of the camera, but it was, yeah.
Very exciting, though. Peter, what have you been up to?
Quite a few different things. So I've worked on London Short Film Festival last weekend and the weekend before that, doing venue coordination duties.
Duties.
Yeah. We've obviously been having our discussions about the upcoming horror festival. So talking about, you know, what films we want to award prizes to, nominations, that kind of thing.
Judges' duties.
Yeah, and I've actually been able to get to a few. Been going to the cinema in real life a few times, which has been nice, because obviously we watch a lot of submissions for the two festivals recently. Mm. So actually going to see new releases has been not really on my list for the last few months.
Are there any new releases that you would suggest people go out and watch straight away, or that face looks maybe not
the three that I've watched recently I didn't love, but obviously they have been beloved by other people, so I saw Tar, I saw Empire of Light. I did enjoy Empire of Light, actually, the Sam Mendes one. Ennismain.
People from Romford and around in that.
There are, yes. Two of the ensemble cast, in fact. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so if you want to see something local, and I've heard the cinematography is very good in
fantastic.
Empire of Light.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. And the score as well.
And obviously go and support your local cinema as
Absolutely.
Well. It's hard times for these guys. Alex, have you seen anything recently?
No, actually, when you were talking about films earlier, I looked on my phone and the last thing I saw was Black Panther at the cinema.
Nice. I think everyone went to see Black Panther at the cinema, though, to be fair. And Spencer, have you seen any films this week?
I've seen lots of films.
None. Spencer's never watching films.
I've seen lots of films this week. What was it we watched yesterday? We watched Jurassic Park. What is it, Jurassic World?
Jurassic World something. And then we watched the one about the superhero kids. Quite enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Don't know what that's called.
Zoom.
Oh, is that what it's called? Zoom.
It's called.
Yeah, I found that enjoyable, but probably Jurassic Park was better than the Zoom film. But yeah. So what have you been up to?
Spent a little bit too long with the BFI. Other than that.
Oh dear.
Yeah, he's just been looking at films for the festival, organising schedules, contacting filmmakers. Organising special guests.
Which we'll hear a little bit more about later, won't we?
Yes.
Excellent. And I, of course, was in Prague last week. You may or may not know. I think Claire mentioned it on the show. But nothing film-related. I was just gallivanting with a load of Europeans. And we were delving into innovative mythologies of youth participation, which sounds very, very dry, but I had a nice time. So the course was supported by the European Union and allowed a group of youth workers from an array of different places to come together, share some stories, share some competencies, and make some games for young people to be able to create... some social stuff. So I made some great connections for the No Collective, including a lovely lady from the LGBTQ+ Creative Network in Warsaw. So she is currently setting up the shop for the first queer museum in Warsaw, which sounds great, actually. I think if you're planning a trip to Poland, maybe pass on by. And all of her stock is really cute as well, you know, if you like merch, which I do. I also met a rave event manager from Latvia. So he was telling me about how during COVID, Estonia and Latvia had very different rules of what you could and couldn't do. And Latvia was quite stern, whereas Estonia wasn't. And there's a town that crosses the border of both Latvia and Estonia. Really interestingly, half of the town is in Latvia, half of the town is in Estonia, and he was setting up a lot of gigs in that town. So when the rules changed around COVID, his gigs could still go ahead. So if the rave wasn't happening in Estonia, they'd just jump across the street and have it in Latvia instead, or vice versa. So yeah, that's really cool. I met some lovely Spanish youth workers who I'm planning to do some strategic things with in the future. Yeah, so I've had a great time. Losers.
So, let's start with some music. And after this, we're going to start with the festival chat. And specifically, what brings Peter and his neutral face to...
his neutral face.
But first, here's Alice Cooper with "He's Back" from Friday the 13th, Part 8. Cooper, haven't you?
Yeah.
So, Peter.
Hello.
Why are you here?
Well, Don't we all ask that question every day?
It's the question on everyone's lips. What is Peter Blunden doing in the Phoenix 98 FM studio?
Yeah, so I'm part of the team that runs the Romford Horror and the Romford Film Festivals. So I do pre-selection on both of those festivals. So that basically means that I watch all the films that get submitted by filmmakers from around the world, and I give my opinion on them. We score the films and things like that, so we can compare and work out, you know, what films we like the best between us in the panel. And then once they're selected, the filmmakers come to the festival, and I do Q&As with them and just sort of generally help out and make people feel welcome and make sure everything runs and all that kind of stuff. Really, that's me in a nutshell.
And what was it that brought you to Romford Horror Festival?
So 3 years ago now, I think it was, just over 3 years ago, I approached Spencer and basically asked, you know, was there things that, you know, I knew about the festival, but did he need anyone who has a background in kind of studying films and is very passionate about films and wanted to, you know, do something in the local area to increase the kind of film culture and you know, build a festival that was already existing, but kind of, you know, add whatever I could add to it, really, anything. And he was kind of a bit taken aback because I don't think he was really used to people kind of approaching him to help out. So that's how that kind of...
What, you want to help us?
Yeah, yeah. Why would you want to do that?
Why?
Yeah. What's in it for you,
this
kind
is
of
Romford.
Thing. Yeah, yeah. But that was basically my rationale behind it. You know, I studied film in the past and I kind of wanted to put that to use and to help out with something that was local because I live in Romford and I, you know, want the festival to be bigger and more successful and year by year. And I think we're doing that.
It was world cinema.
Yeah, I did an MA in world cinema at Birkbeck. Yeah, so that was part of my I did that over 2 years, like a part time evening university course, basically.
And what was the specific interest for world cinema?
Where did it come from?
Or I guess I'm asking, like, which specific culture of films are you?
Oh, okay, yeah.
In?
So my biggest kind of passion, I guess, is East Asian cinema, and also, you know, European as well, but East Asian I've always been very interested in. I did my dissertation on the samurai genre.
Oh, okay.
So that's always been, I've always been really interested in Japanese culture and all that kind of stuff. And when I was at university doing my undergraduate, which was in politics, funny enough.
Interesting.
Yeah, in politics and international relations, I actually, by my kind of third year of my course, I found myself in the film section of the library a lot more than the actual politics section, because I was just, you know, by the third year I was kind of done with what I was actually meant to be studying, and I found it much more interesting to read about Kurosawa and all these amazing filmmakers who I'd never really known before then, and, you know, rent out the DVDs and watch the videos, if you remember those, in the library at the uni. So yeah, that was where it kind of started from, and then after that I kind of thought, well, I want to kind of study it more, so that's what I did.
And it's led you into festivals in general as well, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You mentioned you were at the ICA last weekend. Mm-hmm. You were also doing a stint at the South Asian Film Festival.
Yeah, so I did some work with the London East Asian Film Festival.
Eastern, sorry.
As like, I did some film programming for them, so I did like a samurai season, which I, yeah, programmed, and we showed at Deptford Cinema, which I used to be a like a volunteer programmer at. Yeah, and I've worked on Fright Fest and East End Film Festival and BFI Future, just all those kind of different festivals, really. I just really enjoy. I actually did one of the modules on film festivals as part of my master's, got to go to the Berlinale and all that kind of stuff, so
nice.
Really enjoyed that part of it. And I just like film festivals in general, really, so both working and attending them, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what's your, obviously not Romford, but what's your...
More obviously, Romford.
Romford Film Festival. Oh, wow. I mean, the Berlinale was quite special in 2014, I think that was. It was the year that Lars von Trier had Nymphomaniac in the selection. And for something completely different, the Wes Anderson's Grand Budapest Hotel was in there as well. That was a really good lineup that year. So I enjoyed watching lots of probably four or five films every day for a week, kind of, you know, all around the clock. Taking all that in, it was really, really fun. So that was a great festival. But yeah, I mean, Romford's great. I love working on Romford Festival.
And obviously you've been to a couple of bizarre, well, maybe not all of them were bizarre, but bizarre festivals with Spencer and
yes,
the Film Festival.
That's very true. Yeah. So the Tashkent Film Festival, yeah, where we went in, oh, when was that? September 2021. Yeah, about a year and a half ago. That was quite an experience, yeah. So the Tashkent Film Festival in Uzbekistan, yeah. when Sir Spencer messaged me, and he was like, because obviously we have a tie-in with the Eurasian Creative Guild with our festival at Romford, so it's like a sister festival, and we had contacts there, and Spencer messaged me one day and said, how would you like to go to Tashkent? And my first response was, I've never heard of Tash in Kent. Like, I went to university in Canterbury and I'd never heard of Tash. I was like, where's Tash? And he was like, no, Tashkent. And I had to look it up, I must admit. My geography's not bad, but I did have to look it up. And I was like, it's the capital of Uzbekistan. And I was like,
this is Spencer asking me, is this just some terrible joke that will backfire on me tomorrow?
Exactly.
And I'll say yes.
Exactly. I was actually booked to go like for a hiking weekend with some friends, but I was like, how often are you going to get invited to go to Uzbekistan? So I couldn't turn it down. So we went, and it was. I think I can safely say it was the most surreal week of my life.
Hmm.
Yeah. From the moment we landed, to the moment we left and went to that, well, went to that closing gala. It was just absolutely mad. It was, didn't quite know one day to the next what was going to happen. You got picked up. We were driven around all week. We went to red carpet events. We saw all these film stars. It was just, it was mad. Yeah, it was very surreal.
I should highlight the fact that at one point we travelled down a red carpet in a Mercedes limo van.
We did.
Because they have special carpets for driving on as well.
And we get off the other end and suddenly find ourselves addressing the nation.
Yeah, on live TV.
Yeah.
And the question that everyone is asking is, when are you going to get your drivable carpet outside the Mercury Shopping Centre for the Romford Film Festival?
We're working on that for 2024.
Yeah.
So, when it comes to horror movies, the perception of horror is not always hiding behind a sofa or a pillow. There are some real moments in horror, and particularly the music. And here's two prime examples. The first of which my father played in the orchestra on, and that's from the film Taste the Blood of Dracula. The second comes from the first horror movie that I remember watching as a child, and that is The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. Both of these pieces are really beautiful.
Can we just rewind to my father played on the orchestra?
Yes.
Explain. What did he play on the orchestra?
He was a violinist.
You've never mentioned this.
Yeah, well, it's
the
story of my life.
Okay, so, we'll be back.
No, I should explain this, because otherwise this is weird. So what actually happened was, my dad would make me watch this film every time it came on. And there was no real reference to it. I was always made to watch this film. And after he died, my mum said, it was on, and I said, oh, Dad always really liked this film. And she said, oh, yeah, that's because he played in the orchestra on it. And he never told me.
I mean, like father, like son. but anyway, let's have a listen to this music and see if we can spot Spencer's dad playing the violin.
Thank you.
we went into that section. We are with Mr. Alex Churchyard.
Hi.
Alex, so you're going to be at Romford Horror Festival. Why?
I'm going to be at Romford Horror Festival, well, because I want to, but also Video Shop Tales of Terror is screening on Friday at 6 p.m.
Yes.
Good.
23rd.
And I'm involved with that. I sort of wrote and directed or co-directed a segment, but also had like overall involvement and helped Lau make the wraparound, sort of wrote and directed that, and yeah, just helped out on it, and it's sort of
a bit of
a joint venture, really. The idea originates with Sing Lau. He deserves the credit for that, but then we were brought on board and sort of helped bring it to the screen.
Yeah, I mean, the major part for you, I guess, is the wraparound story.
Yeah, so the wraparound is the thing that is set in the video shop, and it introduces all of the different segments, which are by different filmmakers, six different filmmakers who are all sort of on the indie horror scene. And yeah, I did that, and we mocked up a little video shop. And we've got Martin W. Payne in that, and my wife Hannah's in it, Danny Thompson, Tony Marden, Lawrence R. Harvey from The Human Centipede 2. And yeah, the idea is that we sort of have these weird characters coming in, renting tapes, getting disproportionately punished for things that they do, and that sort of introduces each film.
Excellent. And what was it that got you into filmmaking?
So when I was younger, me and my brother got this thing called a Tyco video cam, which is basically a toy video camera plugged directly into your VHS recorder, and you got like a black and white image that you could press record on and record it straight to a tape. And we started to make like films. We used to do these things called Killer Socks, which was the reason we did that was because I would be filming it, so, and then my brother would be in it. So it just meant that I could put my hand in front of the camera. I'm also doing this physically now on a radio thing, but it meant that I could put like the glove puppet kind of thing in front of the camera and sort of do. So that's kind of how I got into it, because I sort of started doing that, and then as time went on, I'd get hand-me-downs, like video camera hand-me-downs from family members, and just continued making stuff. Went to college, went to university. I think I was always into horror. My stepmom and my dad had a lot of VHS tapes, so I used to sort of nick them and watch those. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. I sort of just from a young age, just because we had this toy, and I think I was just interested in making stories, telling weird stories.
When did it go from being more something that you were doing for pleasure to something that you were going to be showing people?
Yeah, I mean, I guess from a really early age, I had like that ambition to do that. I remember, you know, like sort of had like a fantasy of being like a director kind of thing. The turning point of actually going out and doing it was really, I mean, sort of, it's not your festival, but the Horror on Sea Festival, I saw a lot of sort of low budget films and what people could do with not very much, and it made me realize like we should just like create our own opportunity and just get, you know, sort of get our friends together, get a few resources together, use the skills that we had and the equipment that we had, and just make something. And that's kind of what Ice Cream on the Beach was, which played at the Romford Film Festival in 2020,
which included sock puppets.
Yeah, so that idea. So it's sort of like we basically like from when I was a kid, I made these killer sock films, and then when I went to college, I met Michael who founded Tis Films with me, and I convinced him to make killer sock films, even though we were like teenagers. And then I was like, we went to uni, and I was like, all right, so no more killer socks films. And then we had to make a radio show, so I made like it was a spoof of The Archers, but the twist was that the killer socks attacked the village. So I just never left it behind, basically. And I wanted to make a killer sock film, but then we sort of, Mike and I decided we'd make like a stealth killer sock film, so we would present it as something else, and that would just be the out of nowhere twist at the end, which is what killer socks is, which I've sort of just spoiled for you, but there you go.
Everyone loves killer socks. It's always good when a puppet of some description turns up. No,
yes.
Phil. And so tell us about what's happened since Ice Cream on the Beach, but because there's actually been a... You were working on another feature as well, weren't you?
Yeah, so we've been working on a film called Mosaic, which... we knew after we did Ice Cream on the Beach, we were going to do an anthology, and that went through many sort of iterations. And we sort of finally settled upon doing something that was an anthology where we curated the whole thing. So we directed the whole thing. There's quite a few writers on it, but Mike and I directed it together. And it's sort of a slasher anthology, so it's multiple slasher tales, and it's tied together by a sort of police investigation where a police officer played by Simon Bamford, who was in the first two Hellraiser films, is trying to sort of, he thinks there's a link, and he's a bit of a sort of an outlier within the police station because that, you know, they think, well, these cases can't possibly be linked, but they are. So that's Mosaic, and we shot that sort of, we started shooting in 2020 during the pandemic, sort of had to continue through 2021, and I was still doing bits and bobs on it last year, and we're kind of in post-production on that one now. It's quite a beast of a film.
And that video shot, Tales of Terror, is not the only film showing at the festival that you're involved in, is it?
No, so there's also Horoscopes Volume 1, which is Mike O's anthology. It's the, you know, seven star signs of the zodiac. What they did was we sort of had a Zoom call with all the 12 directors, and they sort of picked names out of the hat and matched them with the different star signs. We got Leo, which is a bit of an odd story, I think, what we've done with it. It's basically about a jealous actor who sort of originated a film role from, let's say it was the 80s, and the idea being that someone's come in and they've made a remake. And I was kind of interested in the sort of like sort of beautification of monsters, so like the idea of like comparing something like Twilight, the way Twilight would like present a vampire, to say something like Near Dark, but then just making it like a really silly comedy. So that's the idea of my segment, Leo.
Okay, cool. And what is next after Video Shop Tales of Terror?
Well, there's Video Shop Tales of Terror 2. it's called Lust and Revenge. We've actually filmed the wraparound for that one already because we wanted to get it done before the set got struck. And you're doing a segment for that one?
Apparently so. I say apparently so because, I mean, half of it might be done. Who knows? And then after Video Shop Tales of Terror 2, what follows then?
I can't say the full title for it because I wouldn't be allowed to, but it's a Christmas horror film.
Okay.
It's basically called Let's Kill Santa Claus, but there's another word in there somewhere. And the sort of idea, well, maybe I won't go into it too much, but a group of people decide they're going to kill Santa Claus.
Okay. And there's also, am I right in thinking, a third Video Shop Tales of Terror on the horizon?
Yes, there's also Video Shop Tales of Terror Pick a Mix, which this time is like six different genres. So we're specifically giving people a genre, and they have to, a subgenre of horror, I should say, and they have to make something that fits within that. And then the Video Shop wraparound will also kind of conform to that, which kind of makes it, sort of changes it up and makes it a bit more interesting, hopefully.
Cool. We'll come back to Alex in a little while. So we've got some music now. First of all, we've got Tom York with Suspirium from the film Suspiria, and Kate Bush, Hammer Horror.
And the longest drum roll exit award goes to Kate Bush for that 1 minute exit of a song. You unfortunately missed being at home and not in the studio, Peter Blunden's rendition of Kate Bush's Dancing as well. So we'll try and film it later if it reoccurs, but unfortunately you have missed it. Anyway, moving on, and we had a little dovetail into the idea of horror subgenres. As you may or may not know, Charlotte, our musical maestro, who we hear from every week with our musical track, is also studying a master's degree in philosophy and art at the moment. She is also part of our horrific team. And as well as being the beautiful face behind the bar, if you've been to the Horror Festival, you know how draining a job that is. She also writes some terrific articles for the festivals, which feature on our website blog. So we're going to have a little listen to one that's been prepared for this year's festival. And this is its first outing on today's show. And lucky for you, you get to listen to my best reading voice while we have a listen to that. Horror is an impressive genre of fiction, which holds centuries' worth of works under its belt. In less than 100 years, however, horror as a genre has become largely synonymous with film. As horror has grown in popularity over the years, so has the number of subgenres it boasts. Since the 70s, we've seen horror take new forms, ranging from slashers to psychological horror to horror comedies. However, as the subgenre grow, the lines between each subgenre become more and more blurred, and as such, we can begin to ask how we should categorise horror. One horror film that seems particularly hard to categorise is the first Saw film, as it does not properly fit under the subgenre it is often associated with. The Saw franchise is often thought to be synonymous with torture porn, which is defined by Collins Dictionary as a genre of horror films in which sadistic violence or torture is a central aspect of the plot.
This subgenre may be appropriate to categorise many of the Saw movies and franchise inspired by its, such as Hostel, as they centre focus on achieving the most gruesome death scenes, body horror and conjuring up the worst torture devices for one to be stuck in, paying little attention to general plot or producing well-rounded characters. Yet at the centre of the first Saw movie isn't a ton of gore or the torture devices themselves, but mystery. While the audience has shown a few successful Saw traps, which do invoke a sense of physical torture, these are but glimpses into the greater mystery the detectives are trying to solve. Indeed, the central aspect of the first Saw plot isn't sadistic, violent or gore, but two men stuck in a room with no means of escape and a detective trying to hunt down a serial killer before it's too late. The two men, the main characters, are by no means physically tortured like many of the victims in the later Saw movies, the worst display of violence being found in a man sawing off his own foot. While still horrific, a character cutting off their own limb is by no means more gory or violent than many scenes in regular horror movies, or even the drama 127 Hours. Indeed, the torture the main characters face is more psychological than physical. As the scenes of physical torture are mainly shown in flashbacks to other traps, which are only a few of, such as, it seems we shouldn't be labelled the original Saw as torture porn, rather it seems far closer to psychological horror. Even the psychological terror the main characters face and the mystery the detective has little time to crack. The conclusion we should draw from this is that we can't class Saw as torture porn, despite it most often being cited as the first torture porn film. Indeed, this shows just how difficult it is to completely understand horror subgenres and how hard it is to place films in them. It is not just categorising certain films that we have trouble with, but it also becomes difficult to distinguish what films, if any, fall into a certain subgenre. Such is the case with horror comedies. While Scream is known for being a light parody of the horror genre, in that it has characters break the fourth wall with their inside knowledge of horror films, it's hard to say how much of a horror comedy it actually is. Indeed, Ghostface is placed up there with the more serious horror movie killers, such as Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees, often being taken as a serious threat in video games and other media. Ghostface is also parodied by Scary Movie, which indicates that it's not comical enough to be made fun of itself. But then what makes it a horror comedy? It can't simply be that it contains jokes, as most horror movies are funny in places to ease tension. Is it because it is a light parody of other horror movies? This would make Scooby-Doo Monsters Unleashed a horror comedy, but of course Scooby-Doo 2 isn't really too scary, and more importantly, it doesn't try to be, considering it's a family movie. Is Scooby-Doo 2 just a comedy with horror themes, or can we state that it doesn't contain any horror elements at all, in virtue of its kid movie status? But then that would mean children films such as Coraline or Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark would no longer be horror movies. Indeed, then it seems to be extremely difficult to understand why some movies are placed in a horror subgenre and others aren't. It's become increasingly difficult to properly define certain subgenres, such as the slasher. One definition states that a slasher film is a horror subgenre that meets certain criteria, including an effective killer, a high body count, and non-firearm weapons. Yet this definition seems to capture too wide a scope and allows for films which are almost universally thought not to be horrors to be slashers. For example, by this definition alone, a film like Seven, which is most often classed as a psychological thriller or mystery, could be classed as a slasher film. Indeed, John Doe is an effective killer who does not use guns. So surely this would mean that Seven is a slasher and is thus a horror, despite our best intuitions claiming otherwise. Perhaps we could argue, however, that Seven does not meet the part of the definition which states the killer must have a high kill count. Yet both Norman Bates and Freddy Krueger have a lower count on their first outing, despite the latter being considered one of the most iconic slasher movie killers. Therefore, if we count Norman Bates as a slasher killer, then the murder's kill count only need be two people or more, four if we count Freddy. As such, to separate Seven from the slasher and horror movie genre, we would need to provide a stricter definition. Does the killer have to wear a mask? No, unless we discredit Freddy Krueger on the cannibals from Wrong Turn. Does the majority of the deaths have to happen completely on screen? No. Otherwise, we discredit many PG slasher movies, as many show build-up to the deaths or after effects, leaving much of the killing off screen, like in Seven. Maybe, then we'd have to determine a slasher film, a film that includes a killer who stalks victims from a main group of protagonists for which the film follows. This would ultimately determine that Seven is a thriller or a mystery, not a slasher, as the main protagonists in Seven are not stalked then killed by John Doe, but instead a random group of people are the victims who have very little screen time. Yet this would lead to one question as to whether or not other films are slashers. For example, in Jennifer's Body, a slasher, despite often not being considered one, given that Jennifer isn't some mysterious killer, but essentially a victim of a sacrifice gone wrong. Nevertheless, she still stalks her victims, whom are all part of a main group of teenagers we follow. This then means we need an even more specific definition of a slasher movie, which would be quite difficult to determine. And even if we were to accept Jennifer's Body as a slasher, then it seems that we have reduced slasher down to a bare-bones definition of a film which features some being stalking a group of protagonists and then killing at least two of them without using guns. Having a definition such as this one seems completely void of don't fit this definition, or films which fit this definition but are not slashers. Indeed, this goes further to prove just how difficult it is to place horror movies into sub-genres. As such, to answer the question, how should we classify horror, I must respond with, I don't know. Much like trying to define philosophy, it seems that in order to place certain horror movies into certain horror subgenres, we must either place a certain movie in a subgenre that doesn't make sense, either intuitively or logically, or we must define a subgenre in which seems to be in an arbitrary manner.
So most importantly, Spencer, is Scooby-Doo a horror film?
Scooby-Doo is horror for children.
Is that a subgenre? You've heard it here first. Horror for children is now a subgenre.
I think so. I think, you know, like, the basis of horror has always been there for children. Whether it's Doctor Who or, you know, Space 99, even like children's BBC shows.
Yeah. I mean, Doctor Who was originally for kids, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then it became more adult as the various series went on. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting topic, and I think we're going to pick up some subgenres of horror in our next part of our interview with Alex as well, so he can prepare himself for that. But before that, it's that time, Spencer.
1:05.
Yeah, which isn't bad.
So,
it's much more on time than it usually is.
To break you into this piece of music, on Thursday the 23rd of February, the Romford Film Festival kicks off with a free screening of Michael Mann's controversial The Keep.
And just very quickly, I need to explain that in order to get that for free, what you need to do is go to romfordhorrorfestival.com, find the listing, and it will take you through to Eventbrite to click the link, and then you can get your ticket. Now, let me explain the story with The Keep. The film surrounds an ancient Romanian creep. A keep? Creep? Creep? Sorry, I was thinking about Peter. Keep. Protected by a small group of people in a village made for the very purpose of protection. During the Second World War, German officers arrive at the keep, fascinated by the crosses that adorn the walls inside. Actor Ian Glen, best known nowadays for The Rig and Game of Thrones, becomes obsessed with a cross and tries to steal it, and in doing so, unleashes a creature buried for centuries. Director Michael Mann created a 3-hour epic that showed not just the evil in the keep, but the evil that men do. When a Nazi officer, played by Gabriel Byrne, summons a Jewish translator, played by Ian McKellen, he is found languishing in a death camp. The story then moves to the horrors of the death camp, showing that the creature that is released in Romania is actually far more human than the Nazi officers running the camp. Paramount Pictures hated the comparison and evil and ordered that 85 minutes of the film shot in the death camp was not only cut, but that it was destroyed. Michael Mann disowned the film, and Paramount Pictures have forever regretted the destruction of the footage, as it's one of the most requested films to be re-edited. While the studio then went into hardship, the director went on to bigger things, creating Manhunter, which was the first instalment of the Hannibal Lecter story, the TV show Miami Vice, and of course, action thrillers Heat and Collateral. This is Stealing the Cross by Tangerine Dream from The Keep.
through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Kitchen door. You better not let him in. Little old lady got mutilated late last night. Werewolves of London again. Gent who ran amok in Kent. Lately he's been overheard in Mayfair. You better stay away from him. He'll rip your lungs out, Jim. I'd like to meet his tailor. Ah-hoo, werewolves of London. Saw Lon Chaney walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw werewolves drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's. His hair was perfect.
And that last track was Werewolves of London, which was chosen by Jill, who is another member of our team. Jill is the friendly face of the festival that gives you all of your passes and sells you merch during the daytime. She can also whip up a pretty good cup of tea and likes a chatty chat.
She does love a chat. Good old Jill. She'll appreciate the shout out as well.
Shout out to Jill or Jilly.
So, we're back with Mr. Churchyard. So, Alex, thinking about, you know, like you're part of a film community in terms of, you know, horror filmmakers. What do you think it is about the horror community? So, first of all, it's a kind of like a double-edged question here. So, first of all, why do you think filmmaking is such high regard in Essex? And then the second part of that question is, what is it you think that makes the companionship, the friendship, the connections within horror in terms of independent filmmaking?
I'm not so sure. I don't really know about the sort of Essex side of it, because I feel like we're quite insulated in a way, like what we've done, and a lot of the filmmakers that I've worked with are kind of from outside of Essex, but perhaps frequent like Essex based film festivals. I think like the sort of the community thing with regards to other filmmakers is interesting, because we're relatively green in a way, because we, you know, our film was 2020, and it's been quite like amazing with the way that we sort of we put this thing out in 2020, and we had no crew on it whatsoever. And then, you know, we put that film in, and we were in the film festivals with other filmmakers, and sort of got to meet a lot of people and become friends with them. And then subsequently, people, other directors kind of volunteer and help work on yours, and we've done that as well. And it's sort of amazing how accepting and sort of welcoming that community is.
Yeah, I mean, I think personally, I just noticed the fact that, you know, I think the horror film community, they're very open to help people, whether whatever their involvement is with horror, in such a way that you don't necessarily see with other genres. You know, you see someone that's a, one day you'll see someone that's a director just literally working as a runner on someone else's film because they want to help out. Do you think it's just this whole kind of nerd aspect of horror that makes this happen?
What are you implying, Spencer? Alex is squirming at the idea of being a nerd.
Alex knows he's a nerd. We all know we're nerds.
It's because of the socks, isn't it?
one thing is that horror is quite a sort of prevalent genre for low budget. So, I guess I would say that because that's kind of what I'm interested in. But I think there are a lot of people making a lot of horror films for next to no money, and I think when you're kind of part of that and you're into horror, they're kind of interesting sets to be on. As great as a drama maybe, I can imagine being on set with people just talking is probably not as interesting as being on set with someone getting decapitated or
There's no prosthetics in Pride and Prejudice, is there?
Exactly.
You're not going to accidentally chop off somebody's arm live in a scene and go, oh, we'll just keep it.
I think that sort of community is pretty welcoming anyway. People who are into horror are usually actually the nicest people.
Yeah.
I think just because there is a big sort of indie and low budget horror scene, I guess people do just get involved with it.
I mean, from our perspective as a film festival, we notice that when it comes to the horror film festival, instantly it kind of took off. There was high volume of people there, whereas the Romford Film Festival, it's taken years and years and years to get to a point that we've got a consistent volume screen by screen by screen. So I think that's an interesting factor from our perspective, is just how quickly everyone became friends and everyone became almost like family, and everyone's connected by Facebook, and how friendly that environment is, considering, you know, some people look at horror and their instant reaction is, oh, I don't do horror, but actually the people that do horror actually lovely.
I feel like the main festival, it's almost like door in, door out, isn't it? It's like you come for the festival that year because you have some kind of link to a film, whereas the horror festival, you come year on year because you just like the vibe and the environment and the people. And it is, it's definitely a much stronger community.
So we heard earlier on about different sub-genres.
Yes. Sub-genres horror. From Charlotte.
Yeah, including the Scooby-Doo is horror for kids. Do you have a favourite horror genre?
Yeah, I suppose my kind of gateway to horror was slasher films. Slasher films mostly of the 80s. So I tend to skewer towards that. And sort of comedy horror as well. So I'm a huge fan of Evil Dead 2, and that's why in Video Shop 1 we have a segment called it's called, part of the title is Mary Whitehouse.
We can't mention it live on air.
And then and that's meant to be a bit of a love letter to, a blatant ripoff of The Evil Dead. So yeah, comedy horror and slashers, which tend to have quite a lot of unintentional and sometimes intentional comedy within them as well.
And if you were to make another type of film that wasn't horror, what would it be?
That's really difficult because my general answer to that would be I wouldn't.
I'm kind of feeling like you've sold your soul to the horror devil, and if you say anything else, he might give it back.
I always remember when it was announced that Sam Raimi would make the Spider-Man film, everyone was just like, what? Why is this? He's a horror filmmaker. But you do generally tend to find that a lot of horror directors do skip the genre and they never go back. And I just wondered if there was anything else that you would like to make.
Yeah, I mean, if Marvel wants to pay me a lot of money, I'd love to make a superhero film. Yeah, sure. Mm. No grand ambitions, really. But no, I don't know. I didn't see it, but there was a trailer or a film recently with David Harbour in the Christmas sort of action film. Mm-hmm. I'd love to make something like that, kind of like a sort of gory action film, which isn't really horror. So maybe that, like a
something that hints to still a little bit of comedic value.
Something a bit quirky. Yeah, comedy and still kind of horror-y in terms of the sort of violence, I guess.
Yeah, I thought last, I think it was like the year before last, when Fat Man came out. I don't know if you saw that, and that was Mel Gibson as Santa. And it was basically an action movie with people going to kind of take Santa down. Mm-hmm. And I thought at the time, yeah, that's kind of the sort of film that I'd like to make.
Yeah, there was one really recently with David Harbour from Stranger Things, but I can't think what it was called. I only saw it. Violent Night, there you go.
Yeah.
Violent Night. How long does the process, for people that don't understand filmmaking? So, I mean, from my perspective, Video Shop Tales of Terror was very, very quick.
Yeah.
How long do you think how long is the average, does it take for you to make a film from start to finish?
I think that depends on the film, and it, you know, also depends on sort of if you work into a deadline. So I think, like with Ice Cream on the Beach, we originally started shooting it in 2016, we stopped, and then we picked it back up in 2019, and within the year we'd filmed it and edited it and submitted it to a festival, but we had a sort of very strict deadline that we set on ourselves. But then Mosaic, you know, we started shooting that in 2020. It's still in the edit. That's because I had other commitments as well. I think, you know, these things can take, you can turn a film around within a year. There are filmmakers who do multiple films, you know, someone like Charlie Steeves, I think he has like 3 films a year. So, you know, you can you can do it. I think it's probably like a discipline thing.
Do you have a favourite part of the filmmaking process?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be editing. It's now my least favourite part. So it's now probably filming. Like that used to be the when we did Ice Cream on the Beach. We started with the biggest scenes, which were in the pub, which involved all the cast and extras. And I remember, you know, it was a small production, but it was bigger than anything I'd ever done. And I remember I kind of went out and sat on the stairs, and I was like, oh, I don't think I have the personality type to sort of deal with this. And like, I was like, oh, I hate it. But now, I think like after doing it for a while, maybe getting a little bit of confidence that I have at least a morsel of talent, but tiny morsel of talent, that, you know, yeah, I find it the best part. And I love sort of sitting behind the monitor and kind of watching the film play out and watching the thing that we've written kind of be brought to life. And especially with the stuff we do, which is like kind of comedy horror, you know, it's just fun. It's fun seeing people.
We're going to go on to some music in a second, but I thought before we do and finish your interview, how do we find out about up-and-coming films that you're involved in?
So, yeah, we don't have like a website or anything, but we're on social media and our handle is Ice Cream Beach.
And that's... it's TIS Films we can find you at, is it?
Yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, TIS Films.
So if you search it into Google, you'll probably come up with the right thing. Or I think there's a Facebook group, isn't there, for Tales of Terror as well, if you want a bit more detail.
Video Shop Tales of Terror has its own Facebook and Instagram as well, so please follow those.
Super. Thank you so much for joining us today.
We're probably not done with you yet.
Information. I was just going to say, feel free to hang around. We'll be intimidating or interrogating or just talking to Peter Blunden in a little while. So feel free to join us for that.
Thank you.
Until then, we'll have a little bit more music. Is your mind?
That was Where Is My Mind from the film Malignant, and that was by Safari Riot.
I love the name Safari Riot. It implies that you're going to go on a safari and then just smash things up, get eaten by a lion.
That is exactly what it's like going to a foreign country with Peter.
Especially if the queuing rules aren't adhered to, I've heard.
Especially when Peter is misidentified as the man that made The Lion King.
I mean, he does look a lot like the man who produced The Lion King.
So
little Rob Minkoff sat over.
Go on, Peter, explain
giggling.
The story.
So we were at the opening night, wasn't it? Or the closing night of the...
Closing night.
Tashkent Film Festival. And we were there in our best tuxedos. And these two guys who were part of, like, the filmmaking for kind of young filmmakers competition came up to me and started talking to me, which, you know, is not that strange. But they... both said, oh, we really love The Lion King. Like, you know, you really influenced us with your film. And I was like, thanks. And it turned out that Rob Minkoff was actually there for the festival and he'd done a masterclass kind of thing a few days before. unbeknownst to them, he'd actually flown home, which we saw on social media, but they thought that I was him. And looking at their little faces, I couldn't let them down. And they were like, can I take a photo with you for Instagram? So I just agreed. And so somewhere out in the world on social media, there's a picture of me probably tagged as Rob Minkoff, who made The Lion King and a few other animated films as well.
And this is how you grasp fame.
Yeah, I just couldn't let them down and say, no, that's not me. So I just went along with it.
So, sorry, I'm just looking over because Alex has just conjured up a picture of Rob Minkoff and given a kind of resigned, look. So, coming back a little bit closer to home, and 23rd to the 26th of February, we have Horrific, or Romford Horror Festival. And now it's time to sort of talk about...
Tell us what's happening, Peter.
Okay, so I wanted to start with actually some of the kind of things that are attached to the festivals. So we've got a lot of, got special guests coming, which I think we'll talk about in a minute. But we've also got merch stalls and board games this year as well, I believe. Yes. So it's all part of making like a culture around the festival. It's not just about the films. Like, you could come to one of our festivals and just have a great time and not actually watch any of the films if you didn't want to.
Yeah.
So we're doing extra things like that. So stalls selling merch, as I said, the board games kind of thing. Oh, and Steve Braun, who's like a professional silicon mask maker, he's doing live demos. So he makes silicon masks for films, including Manfish.
Yep.
That won the top prize last year at the film festival. Mm-hmm. And also other things. He does lots of horror-related masks and superheroes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he made the mask for the bad guy in The Book of Boba Fett. I can't remember what that character's called. But, like, looks like a Western character, and he made the mask for that. So
he'll be there kind of just demonstrating on the day, or does he have a workshop? Or
so he's going to be setting up a table. He's going to have all of his masks there, some of which, no doubt, he will put on at some point and confuse me because I think they're Peter. and
Killer Clown and, one was last year was particularly good, wasn't it?
And he'll be carving a new mask while he's there, so it'll be interesting to see what he does.
So work in progress. Yeah. So you can stop and ask him some questions if you're interested in that, find out how he got there as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so other merch, as Peter's said, there's going to be DVDs, Blu-rays, T-shirts, including Romford Horror Festival T-shirts.
Oh, yeah. Buy all of those.
Lots of books and art. So we've got Rick Melton coming, who does the art for Darkside magazine. So he will be there with his art. And we've got Adele. And she does a lot of classic horror art. And we've got Red Cape Publishing there, who are from Essex, and they write a lot of horror novels and have lots of people write for their label as well. And yeah, like Peter said, we've got Dice In With Life going to be there. We've got Parable Games there, who are actually going to be playing horror related games. And there's also going to be some horror video games there for people to play, which of course then takes us on to...
Oh, you know who you haven't mentioned?
Who?
Our team member from the North.
Oh, yes.
Kevin
Howden. So Kevin runs works for a website called Nerdly. And Kevin will be doing Nerdly live sessions in another screen. So he'll be talking to people that are attending the film festival and filmmakers that are coming. And they'll be he'll be whisking them off for live streams on Twitch. And that'll be happening all throughout the festival.
Because there'll be loads of filmmakers there, won't there? So you're expecting up to 100 filmmakers.
I think we've got
weekend.
About 116 filmmakers coming to represent their films.
So if you're a young filmmaker, it might be a really good idea. Just come along to have a chat with some people, see how you get into the industry, how you can start your own film. Of course, watch some films.
Yeah, absolutely. because that's where it all starts. But it is that process. You can come and watch a film, and then you can talk to someone like Alex, who made the film, and you can extract information from them about the film and their experiences.
And we've made some special passes for the filmmakers that say filmmaker on them, so that all of these lovely young people can come up and talk to Alex about being a filmmaker. A special pass for Alex. It's a bit like a sandwich board that you'll be wearing.
So what else is going on there, Peter?
Also, I wanted to shout out the themed cocktails.
Oh, yes.
Because they cannot be overlooked. They are one of the highlights of the festival, I believe.
And they are brewing away.
Oh, great to hear. So you picked, like... You theme them with the films, don't you, in previous years?
Yeah, so we've got some mastermind cocktail makers in the background, me being one of them, because I do the finance stuff behind the cocktails, very exciting. But we have Carrie, one of our selections teams. She has obviously watched all of the films, so she gives some advice on which types of cocktails that we would label to which drink. And then we have Charlotte in the background, who drinks a lot of cocktails, deciding which ones we should probably go for this year. I'll add a little bit of a spin on colour and what types of cups and glasses, again, for the financial aspect. But yeah, between us, I think we do a pretty good job. So look out. We'll have five cocktails this year that are themed on films. One will be non-alcoholic. And for the first time, we will have a set of shots that you can get.
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? And may I just let you know that they are very, very affordable, so you can have multiple.
Nice. I won't be, though, because I have to ask questions to filmmakers, and that could go
horribly wrong. I'll give you a cocktail token, Peter. You can have one.
We finish, yeah.
Yeah.
So should we talk about some of the films in the lineup? I think would be a good idea.
Go on.
Yeah, so I'll start with some feature-length films, because we do show features and shorts. So Life on the Farm is kind of horror-adjacent. It's a documentary. The tagline of the film is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre meets Monty Python. So, you know, if that doesn't sell it to you, nothing will. It's basically the outline of the documentary is this guy finds some videotapes that he basically inherits from his grandfather when his grandfather dies, and they are home tapes recorded and made by one of their neighbours, who is this very eccentric guy who ran a farm, and he makes kind of videos of his family and the animals in some very strange kind of dark, macabre ways. But you kind of start out watching this documentary thinking this guy is just crazy, and, you know, but you finish the documentary having a very different kind of opinion of him, and he's very life and death positive, which is a very different kind of way to looking at things. But he has this very unique way of looking at the world, which by the end completely wins you over, because you think some of these things are going to be horrific, but actually when you kind of take a look back, they're very kind of sweet in a way.
And for those of you that would like to dip your toe into the film festival but aren't yet sure whether you're into horror, this is a fantastic gateway into the festival, because it really isn't horror. It is a very, very good documentary. Yeah. It's probably the best documentary I saw in 2022, and that includes all the stuff on Netflix, which I think is where this film is going.
Yeah, you can see it that going that way, because it is excellently well made, as you say. So, Puppet Killer. We were talking about puppets earlier, and a quick shout-out to Puppet Killer, which is a film we had in the film festival, in the regular film festival, a year or two ago. But, I mean, if you don't want to see 50-year-old actors playing high school American students with a pink killer puppet called Simon, I believe.
Yes.
You know, if you don't like that, then there's no hope for you at all. The Creeping, which one, that was a feature I really enjoyed, which is kind of textbook horror film. It's about ghosts and, you know, the ghosts within the history of a family and how that becomes revealed. It's got some excellent actors in that. Peacock, which is a South African gothic horror. That's a really good, really well made, really slick, looks amazing, very well acted.
If someone
again
said to you that this film was going to win an Oscar, you wouldn't doubt it. The quality is incredibly high.
Yeah. I'm going to say Video Shop, Tales of Terror.
Have to.
Yeah, I mean, just great fun. Just great fun. I was talking to Singh Lau, who's the producer, the other week, and he asked me what I thought of the film, and I said, we get a lot of films submitted. Obviously, I've watched well over 100 hours just for the Horror Film Festival, and we get a lot of films which are just not fun at all, and they're a real slog to get through. And you don't want that, especially in the horror genre. You want something. It's either going to be scary or it's going to be just fun. And yeah, it really was fun. There's the six segments are all very different, but all great in their own way. So there's some of the features. Some of the shorts. Kiddo was one of my favourites, which is a very strong allegorical film that kind of opens on this bus in the, I think it's kind of set in Yorkshire, or certainly the north of England. And there's people in kind of pink jumpsuits with dog collars on, but they don't know why they're there, and they're being kind of transported to a mysterious location, and it goes in some very dark places. But that's a very, very strong film. Solus is a very interesting film.
Is that sci-fi?
It's sci-fi horror, yeah. So the premise behind this was the filmmaker got some footage from the International Space Station.
Mm.
So it's all kind of, you know, internal and external on the space station. And they've recut it and added a voiceover in a way that kind of makes up a story that something bad is happening to the space station. But very creative way to use already existing footage but kind of mould it into a sci-fi horror story. So that was called Solus.
Kind of sounds like a documentary in itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, really fascinating. I'd love to find out more about how they made that exactly. Type Till You Bleed. So that's for all the people that like their 80s horror homages. That's about kind of like a cursed Soviet-era video game. That was a lot of fun. So there's some of the things that I would recommend. I mean, there is something for everyone. You come along, from everything from slashers to ghost stories to folk horror, all the kind of sub-genres which we touched on earlier, all covered at the festival this year.
And I think retro was one of the themes that Spencer's spoken about, and there's a cheeky little article from Spencer about the retro films that we're showing this year in the programme. You can come pick that up from the Mercury Shopping Centre next week.
Nice.
It is going to be hot off the press. And I think the other sub-genre theme of the festival is Italian celebrities, right, Spencer?
Yes. So, during the 1980s, there was this wave that swept the world, but particularly here in the UK, and that was of banning films. And these films were called video nasties. So it was a big deal. And that was, I think it was 76 films in total were banned in the UK. And then over the, you know, in more recent times, they've been seen to not be so nasty and have been released. And in fact, organisations like the BFI and MUBI now push these out as art films and do whole seasons devoted to these films. And some of them are now, you know, sat in the top 100 films of all time. So, you know, it just goes to show a difference that 30, 40 years makes. But the reason why I mention this is because we have two actors who are flying in from Rome, who represent between them four films that were on the video nasty list. And that is the actress Silvia Collatina, who's making her first UK appearance at some sort of festival, who was a child actor in film. And then we also have Giovanni Lombardo Radic, who is coming in notorious for films like Cannibal Ferox and House on the Edge of the Park, but also more recently The Omen and Gangs of New York, that Peter and I went and saw where the set was.
We did in Rome.
When we were in Rome. So these two actors, as I said, they're flying in on the Thursday, and they're going to be with us throughout the festival, popping up here and there. And then on the Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, we're doing special interviews with them, in which they're going to talk about their experiences in these highly important films of the 80s, and, you know, how it's affected their life and where they go from there, and also what they're up to now, because both of them are still active, and one of them has almost, shall we say, been reactivated recently, and that's Sylvia.
Yeah, just through finding out that she will be at the festival, yeah. Which is quite fun.
And then, yeah, so a quick question for Alex. Oh, come on. Sorry. We're moving microphones about. Alex, other than your own film, yes. Are there any films that you're looking forward to watching at the festival?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few that I've seen, so I can recommend them. Tales from the Great War by Andrew Elias.
Yes.
We call him Chow Handy, so I'm always a bit, like, confused. Like, not sure what his surname is. That's a really... I love that film. That was at Horror on Sea, and it had a really, really good sort of reaction. And what else is that? Eating Miss Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
That's like... I feel like if there's a film that was ever specifically made for a person, then that film was made for me. I've seen it twice. I'm looking forward to seeing it a third time. It's so funny. I think, like, Liam Regan is genius.
Yeah.
What else is there? Feed Me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a really good shot film. One of the stars of it, the sort of killer.
Yes.
He lives in Rochford, so he's very local to me. I met him at Horror on Sea. But that's a great film, and he sort of... I remember when he introduced it, he sort of said it's a really low budget, but it looks amazing.
It's a phenomenal looking film.
It really is. So those three would be my picks.
Excellent, thank you.
And if you want to come along to the Romford Horror Festival, tickets are £34, and you can see everything and do everything for that amount of money, and that's from the Thursday to the Sunday. There's a free party on Thursday night if you have that ticket. There are still tickets available. You just need to go over to www.romfordhorrorfestival.com to grab yourself one of those. There's also day tickets at £15 a pop, and you can also just come see one film, which is £4, and enjoy the vibe of the festival. Now we're going to have a little bit more music before the end of the show, so here is Linkin Park for My Joy.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. You're far too kind. Woo. Yeah.
Ready?
Woo. Can I get an encore? Do you want more? Cook and roll with the Brooklyn boys. So for one last time, I need y'all to roll. Now what the hell are you waiting for? After me, there should be no more. So for one last time, make some noise.
Get him, Jay.
Who you know fresher than whole? Riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lyrically at. Can none of y'all mirror me back? Yeah, hear me rap, it's like Angie rapping his prime. I'm Young H.O., rap's grateful dead. Back to take over the globe, now break bread. I'm in Boeing jets, Global Express. Out the country, but the blueberries still connect. On the low, but the yacht got a triple deck. But when you young, what the you expect? Yep, yep. Grand opening, grand closing. Damn your manhole, crack the can open again. Who you gonna find open to him with no pen? Just draw inspiration. Who so you gonna see you can't replace him with cheap imitations of these generations? Do you want more? Cook and roll with the Brooklyn Ball. So for one last time, I need y'all to roll. Now what the hell are you waiting for? After me, there should be no more. So for one last time, make some noise. Look what I made for you. Knew if I paid my dues, how will they pay you? When you first come in the game, they try to play you. Then you drive a couple of hits, look how they wave to you. From Marcy to Madison Square, to the only thing that matters is just a matter of years. As fate would have it, J status appears to be at an all-time high. Perfect time to say goodbye. When I come back like Jordan, we're in the 4-5. It ain't to play games with you, it's to aim at you. Probably maim you. If I owe you, I'm blowing you to smithereens. Except I take one for your team, and I need you to remember one thing. I came, I saw, I conquered. For record sales, sold out concerts. Come up, you want this encore. I need you to scream to your lungs to soar. Come on.
Tired of being one.
lost under the surface. Don't know what you're expecting of me, but under the pressure of walking in your shoes.
And that is all we have time for today on our special horror festival themed show. A huge thank you to Peter and Mr. Alexander Churchyard for joining us and giving some insight into the working world of independent film and cinema. We hope you can join us at Romford Horror Festival in a couple of weeks' time. We are going to have an absolute ball.
Having a ball.
Have a ball!
And of course, thank you to Spencer for joining me as a co-host this week. We are now passing you over to Nigel, who will be playing the best funk and soul tracks for 2 hours of dancing joy. And we are quickly going to leave you with a couple more creepy tracks, starting with Mr. Sinister by I Don't Know How They Found Me, which was chosen by Charlotte. I'll see you next week when I'm back on the show with Claire. Until then, I've been Natalie.
I've been Spencer.
I've been Peter.
And I've been Alex.
And this has been the Arts Programme live on Phoenix FM.